Back for another week. Perf. Oh, you still have to work tomorrow?
Oh, God.
This is Between Two Millennials. I'm your host, Jonathan McClelland. Unfortunately, my co-host Nicholas Miloslav Pechik will not be joining us today, as his sister Catherine was in a minor car crash and now Nick has to drive her around. Joining me on the pod today, we have several guests. Matthew James Huckabee will be joining me in the second section for a discussion on craft beer. But for this first session, I've got Eddie Munoz and Augustus Scalacci, my roommates here. What's up, guys?
Glad to be here.
Again, yeah, always a pleasure doing this for the first time.
It's always a pleasure doing it for the first time.
I mean, just saying, yeah, just
do
saying.
Do you even English, bro? Is this how people talk in Indiana?
Okay. This is.
We're gonna berate you this entire pod.
I know. I've started off strong in the first two takes. Just kidding.
Oh, wow.
This is the first take.
Called out.
Yeah.
Well,
here we go.
As you guys know, this is a social commentary on all things millennials. We tend to talk about politics, relationships, geopolitics, sports, the economy, whatever it may be. Today, we're going to talk about jobs. But before we get there, would you all please introduce yourself? Let us know where you come from, little background. Eddie?
Yeah, I'm from Salinas, Monterey, California. Finishing up my senior year at a local university, studying international business econ, working in the tech industry here in Silicon Beach. Would like to pursue that. Yeah.
Rad.
My name is Gus Scalacci. I am roommates with John McClelland and Eddie Munoz.
Thank you for repeating what I said a minute and a half ago.
In case the viewers forgot why I'm actually here.
Right, okay. So Gus is my roommate, just to like drive that point home.
John put my Thin Mints in the washing machine the other day.
I did do that. This isn't a lie.
Not a joke. And then a bit about myself. I am a millennial senior at Pepperdine University from Zionsville, Indiana.
Worst state. That's a great background.
I am... I really like dried soybean cakes from Chinese restaurants.
Interesting.
And yeah, we'll get into my career down the road.
So specifically when looking at the soybean, what's your favorite part?
The soy.
The soy part of it. Fun fact, Gus is a farmer. Outside of our apartment, he currently has an onion growing.
It's actually pretty impressive. I wish this was actually like a video podcast because those things exist. Called vlogs, right?
Yes, yeah.
So that we could show you, but unfortunately you'll just have to imagine a kind of like a sunflower that's like 6 feet in the air. That's about what we got going in our front yard. So in the middle of the urban Santa Monica.
In the middle of Santa Monica, yeah. It's beautiful. Surprisingly, nobody's come along and taken it out yet. But anyway, so we are here to talk a little bit about millennials and our careers. That sound good to y'all?
Yeah.
Cool. So... as seniors, as people who are about to graduate and out, go out into the real world, do y'all have that first job lined up yet?
Yeah, I'm in talks where I currently intern. Like I said, here again in Santa Monica, Venice area. I'm in ad tech. I'll be getting that soon. But what about you guys?
I'll be doing auditing work for one of the big four accounting firms here in Los Angeles. It's riveting.
Yeah, you sound so excited when talking about it.
Yep.
It's accounting.
Yep. It's it's pretty fantastic. Not going to lie.
Okay.
I'm just going to keep the same vocal inflection, though, to throw you guys off.
Okay.
And to throw the viewers off.
The listeners?
No, the viewers.
It's viewers? Okay. Yeah. All right. You are viewing this podcast right now. Mm-hmm. So as you are going into these first jobs, what do you expect from this company? What are you looking for? What are some things that are important to you? You know, like, are you looking for money? Are you looking for fame, glory? Are you looking for beanbags and ping pong tables? What do you want from this first job?
Yeah. Salary, of course, is the biggest. Living here in Santa Monica, Los Angeles, you need that north of 50, 60K to really survive. Wow. Because of rent.
It's pretty high.
It's very high.
But you're choosing to live in Santa Monica.
Yeah, because of the commute. And if I was to work in Santa Monica, I would love to live somewhere nearby.
Okay.
But besides that, actually what's most important to me is the responsibilities that you are given in your first job. Because I feel like if you go straight into a corporate environment, your first job, your first position as an associate being in the mailroom, essentially being the coffee runner, so you're still continuing that state of being an intern. But I feel like being in a lean state kind of environment where I'm currently at, is that you are given many hats. You are basically thrown in the water, no instructions, but you can really you can really exploit those responsibilities and thrive in them, because I can jump straight into a corporate environment and not really grow professionally, but in this lean state startup-y environment, 2-3 years, you can basically become an executive.
So what you, just to summarize real quick,
you want to
be involved in what's happening in the company,
yeah,
and you want opportunities for upward mobility.
Exactly.
As opposed to being entrenched into a basically desk job where you're kind of stuck doing the same thing over and over for a while.
Yeah, I just want to be challenged at the end of the day.
Okay.
Because if we can reach that, you know, we have the skills that we currently have and we're learning every day. So, I want to have that challenge.
Would you say in this rapidly, as you come from the tech industry, would you say that having the ability to adapt very quickly to changing market forces is going to be crucial for our generation to have success? Or are there going to be jobs where you're kind of allowed to be stagnant, like for the past 60 years there are many jobs where you do the same thing over and over for a long time? Do you think those are going to be a mainstay anymore, or are you going to really have to adapt consistently?
From what I see, yeah, it's definitely leaving your comfort zone, because look at Radio Shack, look at Circuit City. They were strong in their industry, then here comes Best Buy, here comes Amazon, and you get thrown off your horse, basically. You always have to be learning. You always have to be in the news, because just like market segments shift, you always have to be on top and ahead. If not, you're gonna be left behind and somebody else can do it better, you know?
Yeah.
There's globalization in here. You don't jump on it now, somebody in China, somebody in Israel will.
Yeah.
So you always have to be on top of your game.
Would you want to go international?
Most definitely. I came into Pepperdine with the mindset of international business. I have a Spanish background. Went to China my sophomore year, as long as these two gentlemen here in front of me. If it doesn't work out here in Santa Monica, I would love to go to London, love to go to Rio de Janeiro, would love to go to Shanghai, basically anywhere.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, Augustus, what were you looking for? Now, you already have a job lined up, but what were you looking for in this first job? What were the goals?
Mainly, I was looking for a career that would match the skills that I was developing in school.
The thing is, you have no skills.
Wow.
You're a skillless individual.
Wow.
You're unskilled labor.
Wow.
I mean, here's the thing, is that school, despite what most of our younger millennial people think, is not necessarily a place for learning things that will be useful in your job. Like, nobody's learning the intro to neurosurgery in like their bachelor's degree. Like, that's just impossible. You'll go to school for a long time for that.
I think you go to college to like get a wife, basically.
Okay, that's one outlook on it. I'm accepted to Paul. Sure.
No, it's no networking. It's only to end up in a relationship. That's the only reason
you are learning how to learn.
If you go to Pepperdine,
it's interesting. Lots of COC schools prioritize getting married.
Yeah,
pretty quickly. Anyway, sorry.
Anyway,
random aside.
I was looking for job security.
Okay.
Looking for also mobility too. I see a lot of these corporate firms with high turnover actually tend to lead to easier mobility moving up, because there's less competition. obviously among your peers and right. fellow job colleagues.
And especially with Big Four, you can move offices pretty easily, right?
Yeah, a lot of these companies do 2-year rotations in different locations if you are interested in that. But yeah, we'll see from there. And then as far as benefits, I guess it has all the same corporate. That wasn't as huge of a draw for me. I was also really looking for a competitive business where I would get along with the people, but also be driven and inspired by my fellow colleagues.
You haven't met them yet, though.
I have. When I interned with them this past summer.
And you loved your internship.
I did. Yeah. I thought it was really awesome.
Cool. Did they have ping pong tables?
They did not. Actually, they do. They do have in their office, but I wasn't really in
That's so millennial. My gosh.
Yeah. It's a very young business, I will tell you that much. The average age of a person working at an accounting firm is 26 years old.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Is it just because you're in audit, right? Mm-hmm. And so in the audit department, they usually take people fresh out of school.
Exactly.
They stick around for how many years? How many years do people usually stay?
86% of people leave after 2 years.
Interesting. So are you think you're going to be part of that 86? What's your kind of long-term outlook on
Who's to say? You know, I have a 14% chance of not being a part of that 86.
That's like decent odds.
He can do math.
Exactly. That's part of my job. And actually, my job is checking to make sure that is correct. Or just agreeing to what last year's people did, because that's pretty much what auditors do. That's an accounting joke for all you listening out there.
Sounds riveting.
Yeah.
Thanks for telling us when you were putting the joke in there.
Oh, you know, sometimes it's hard for people to understand humor when it's coming from such a dull kind of person.
I wouldn't describe you as dull.
Oh, I was fishing for a compliment right there.
All
right,
I take back my comment there. You're the dullest person I've ever met. Go pull a knife out of the cupboard. That's how dull you are. Yeah, or a spoon.
Wow.
Anyway, so this is
John. What are you looking for?
There we go.
Since you are unemployed right now.
I am unemployed. This isn't false, and I also have no job possibilities. Because nobody will hire me. I'm basically the most unmarketable millennial out there.
Because you only have your high school degree, is that
exactly
correct?
Yeah. I am 22. I'm in a master's program, and the only thing I have to show for it is my high school diploma. So if anybody wants to hire a high school graduate, hit me up. But I'm getting my MBA and trying to go to law school after that, but in the interim, probably like 2 or 3 years between master's and law school, I don't know. I want to work in something renewable energies related. So solar industry would be cool. Hydroelectric would be cool. I don't want to do sales. Sales isn't something that I'm necessarily down for. But if I could do, you know, operations or finance, that'd be good. And I feel like a pretty big thing for our generation too is the social responsibility that comes behind a lot of these companies. I feel like we want to know that what we're doing is making a difference, and that's a big one for me. I'm definitely looking for a company that doesn't necessarily... I would take a lower paying job at a company that is socially responsible over a higher paying one that doesn't have as good of a reputation in that regard. And I feel like that is more and more becoming something that our generation prioritizes. Would you all agree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Question: do you think it's like a shaming thing for millennials to get a minimum wage job directly out of school? Do you think like our millennial culture thinks that's a bad thing?
Yes, I think if you polled the majority of millennials, especially if they're college educated, they would not be down for an entry level minimum wage job.
Do you think that has changed since?
Set like
previous generations
compared to other generations. I mean, I think because our job market has become considerably more competitive given globalization, I think basically college educated individuals expect to be paid more and would rather not work than work at it for a minimum wage job for that reason, because it's like I feel like I'm entitled to a better job. I don't want to work for what's the minimum wage here? $11 an hour, $10 an hour?
So it'd be 15.
Tennessee, it's $7.25. Like, if I went back home and lived in Nashville and worked, I would not want to work for $7.25. And I think I would rather be unemployed and
even
searching.
Even if it was a socially conscious company?
See, that's really tough. It would depend on what I was doing, right? And
right.
I would take a job that paid, let's say, $7.25 an hour in China that was helping clean up environmental issues, because that's what I'm most passionate about. And I would be able to make the finances work. Plus, living in China is cheaper than living in the U.S. But if we're looking in a vacuum, would I want to work for $7.25 an hour? No. I feel like given my education and my background, I deserve more than that. But that's what everybody thinks. Everybody believes that they deserve to be paid more than what they are. So, I don't know. Is that scumbag of me to...
Not necessarily. Not if it's culturally intact, I guess. That's another question. If something is scumbaggy, even though it's culturally...
Well, do you think it's scumbaggy?
No. I mean, I think financially, like, net present value of your education, the amount of time it would take to earn back only being paid like $7.25 an hour,
it'd be tough.
Is like a ridiculously
amount. It'd be really tough.
Long time. Like, you would, if you did strict student loans for your education, you'd be paying off loans probably for like 30 years.
Yeah.
Based on how much you make. So I think most millennials, I mean, that's the main invisible hand at work, is that financial burden that education causes, and they want to be able to make that up as quickly as possible. It's an interesting formula.
I saw a map on LinkedIn a couple days ago that showed the average starting salary for millennials across the country. Each state was different, but the average was right around $20,000 a year.
Oh,
what?
Yeah, it was really, really low. But I think that's also taking into account non-college educated individuals. But if we look comparably, I mean, you're talking about wanting to get a 50 to 60K job right out.
Yeah.
That automatically puts us kind of above what is average and what is normal. And so I guess my question now is, what really should our expectation be? Because I mean, I think pulling a 50 to 60K job coming out of Pepperdine, like, we're all like well educated and decently hardworking, is relatively reasonable. But
Actually, I would say 50 to 60K based off intern experience. You know, there's those people who go throughout college, you know, going to parties, doing this, doing that, and not really working, not really building up their hard skills or soft skills in a workplace setting. Whereas there's people like, hopefully, like myself, who's been interning for the past 2-3 years, working on hard skills, working on everything that's in the industry that I want to start off in. And honestly, I do feel like I should get that 50-60K because I honestly have that year's worth of experience. And yes, that was done throughout school, you know, working 20-25 hours a week, working summers, working breaks. But that's why I do feel entitled to that 50-60K job if we have that experience, that 1 year, 2 year experience in that industry. So that's my reasoning behind it.
Got it. So I guess to kind of close out this section, we're talking right now to a 17-year-old high school individual who is looking to go to college. What advice and recommendations would you give them for their college experience to, I guess, maximize the potential returns coming out now? I mean, obviously, not all of us are working yet, so we can't fully experience that. But what do you say to that individual? Like, how do you maximize your college experience to come out with a job that's hopefully going to help you long term?
I mean, I would say get involved in like events and organizations that are going to help further you professionally, but also socially too. Like, I think you learn a lot of key social skills in college because you're dealing with such an interesting group of people, as well as dealing with like professors and all that stuff. But what I also think is really interesting is doing what Eddie said and getting involved in the workforce. Even if it is just a minimum wage job, you learn how to be a good employee, and you learn how to work in an age where I think most millennials don't actually have that. And that is a very key edge to have upon your competition, is the experience of working in a company, no matter how big or small. It shows that you know how to take direction. It shows that you can learn and also lead a bit as well. Get involved, be active. Don't just kind of drift through your college experience.
And I want to slightly retract what I said earlier. Clarify. I would not want to work a minimum wage job out of my master's program, but I did work multiple minimum wage jobs during college. And like you said, that taught me how to work and what it means to do hard work. I mean, I was a roofer for a summer in Tennessee. That was hard manual labor work. I mean, and I was the guinea pig too, because everybody else was over the age of 50. I could talk about my roofing stories. One of my coworkers was a murderer. He murdered somebody. No, of people. He murdered a person, went to jail, and then came out. He was a reformed Seventh-day Adventist. He was a really nice guy. But anyway, like, working those types of jobs taught me, I guess that particular job taught me that doing well in school will prevent me from ever having to do roofing, which was not something I was passionate about. But I agree. I think getting jobs in college are essential. They're absolutely essential. And it's just good experience, good networking. Eddie, do you have anything else to add to that?
No, yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. My dad owns a landscaping company, so working every summer, working every break, doing the manual labor, getting paid whatever he says he will pay me, it really builds character at the end of the day. It really pushes you for that college degree.
I guess we all three had manual labor jobs growing up.
At some point.
Yeah. I think it does teach a lot. Yeah.
Highly recommend. Would you go back to your manual labor job over working a big four firm if it paid the same?
Ooh, that's an excellent. I would actually consider that. I think manual labor is super rewarding, despite how hard it is sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think usually you are building something and tearing it down, so it's a very easy way to see like an end product of what you're working towards, and so that visually, I think it's an extremely rewarding.
Yeah, a lot of pride that goes into that.
Yeah.
Health-wise as well.
Uh-huh, you're it's
active.
Good for you.
You're active instead of being at a desk job.
Exactly.
But you can get a standing desk, bro.
And I do have a standing desk. I have a standing desk, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Before lunch, I sit down, drink my coffee.
And your
beanbag?
You sit in your beanbag and then go back to your standing desk?
I don't have a beanbag. I have an exercise ball.
my gosh.
But in the afternoons, so I won't fall asleep after eating, I get my standing desk going, and it's a transformer.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well.
That's ridiculous.
Standing desks are awesome. Try it out, you guys.
That's what every person who has a standing desk says. Oh, you just need to try it.
You need to try it.
It's hard at first. You're standing for so long, but you're more focused in your work, essentially.
So,
because I focus on my sitting actually when I'm sitting down, as opposed to
all right, you're done. So to round out this segment, you just plugged standing desks. Is there anything else y'all would like to plug?
Double monitors for sure.
All right. Oh, I'd plug
this is
that.
Like this is like yeah. time for personal
here,
plugs.
Here.
No, I mean if you want to be productive, you have to have your emails going in one monitor and then your work going in the other. I mean,
geez, how many emails?
Maybe
do you
even
get a
triple
day?
Triple monitor. I mean emails. Communication apps, all that good stuff.
I would like to plug that I am between two millennials designated graphic designer.
This is true.
John will leave my business card information in the description of this video thing. And if you truly need any help, I will give you a semi-pro level of work.
Semi-amateur.
Yeah, it's not going to be good, but it'll be good enough.
And what is your software of choice when creating these?
I like to use PowerPoint.
for graphic design.
Yeah, I think that it enhances the true culture and flavor of an art piece. And so, that's what I live for.
All right, well, cool. Thanks for coming on the pod today, guys. this next session, we're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with Matt Huckabee to talk about some craft beers. So stick around.
I'm never coming back. I'm never coming back. I'm never coming back. I'm never coming back.
Hey, friends. Thank you for tuning in to the pod this week. For more information on what we are doing, head over to our website, betweentwomillennials.com. If you have any particular topics you'd want us to talk about, shoot us an email at betweentwomillennials@gmail.com. And as always, please subscribe, rate, and review in the iTunes podcast app or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, and let's head back to the show. And we are back from the break. Eddie and Gus are no longer with us, but my trusty co-host, Nick Petrick, is back.
I'm back! I'm alive! Yeah.
You rescued your sister from the car accident. You were a valiant hero.
Rescued my sister. I was the hero of the weekend, and she's safely back in College Station.
That's incredible. Thank you for that. Yeah, and joining us for this session of the pod is former dorm mate and good friend, Matthew James Huckabee.
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
Welcome.
Thank you for coming on the pod, Matt. We really appreciate it.
Lucky to be here.
So, who are you?
Lucky, wow.
I, as you mentioned, am an ex-roommate kind of guy. I was in the same dorm as Nick and Jonathan freshman year. Had a great time.
At what university?
Pepperdine University, for those that don't know.
Great place.
Currently in the same program as Jonathan for getting my MBA.
Yeah.
And we're really excited to be done.
Yes, I cannot wait to be done.
I'm no longer in school.
Matt, you're also from Bakersfield.
I am originally from Bakersfield, California, born and raised.
Bakersfield and Palmdale, baby.
If you had to describe that part of the country in one phrase, what would you say?
Kind of the armpit.
I was gonna say the butt crack, but
it's not that bad.
Honestly, like armpit's a little more descriptive. A little more accurate, I feel like. Butt crack is like a general term. That's not good.
Okay, fine, whatever. Y'all gang up on me.
This is the high desert, dude. We're very descriptive.
Exactly.
I didn't know that. Nashville. I never considered people from the high desert to be so descriptive. Yes, in Nashville, we're simply butt cracks. That's what we are.
That's right. But we have no humidity. Y'all have humidity there.
Oh, we have so much humidity. But Matt, you also worked on a farm in Bakersfield.
I did. I had the pleasure of working a few summers at Grimway Farms, a company my dad works for. Mm. I learned the values of hard work and spending summers in the hot heat. It's fun.
Wow. Jesus. Sounds exhilarating.
And Bakersfield in the summer is not fun.
Mm-mm. No.
Nope.
I visited you one time. Two times.
Yeah, it was in August, I think.
Yeah.
And oh, my God.
It was hot.
Dear Jesus.
Doesn't get much worse.
Yeah.
Seriously. You can't go much lower than that.
Yeah. It was real hot. But anyway, so let's move into the second topic of the day. Something that we are all very familiar with and something that I think we enjoy a lot. Craft beer.
Absolutely. I'm currently holding one in my left hand.
What are you holding, Nick? Let's all tell everybody what we're drinking right now.
Right now, I'm holding a Ballast Point Sculpin IPA.
The best.
Very wonderful.
Basic. That's a basic craft beer, thank you very much. If you haven't heard of the brand, then it's actually a hip craft beer now. Yeah. Matthew?
I have in my hand an Anderson Valley Hop Otten IPA.
Ooh, wow. Ooh. See, I haven't heard of that. Can you believe that, Nick? So,
you're basic,
and Matt is OP.
It is true.
Matt is OP.
The geography kind of plays a part in this.
Yeah, this is true.
This one's cool. It's a solar-powered brewery. Interesting.
Really?
Wow.
I love that.
100% solar-powered.
Hey, I love sustainable
breweries. Ron, that's right down your alley, dude. You're ready.
Yeah. Maybe I should go work for them.
Tying in last week with this week? Wow.
Woo. I know. Like, hey, Anderson Valley, if you're listening, give me a job.
Give me a jingle, dude.
I know how to put roofs on buildings, and I know how to work an Excel spreadsheet. Those are my two practical skills.
on the daily.
It's insane. And for the record, I am drinking a Sierra Nevada German style IPA that is it's a hop fen ale.
I'm sorry, did you just blast me for drinking Ballast Point and you're drinking Sierra Nevada?
So here's the deal.
Is that what you just blasted me for?
I thought I had Stone in the fridge, but apparently my roommates drank all of them and they're all gone. And so I gave Matt the Anderson Valley, and I found buried deep in the fridge the Sierra Nevada German style IPA.
I'm offended that y'all blasted me.
I'm actually offended. You know?
This is true. Yeah, at least it's an India.
That's not a mainstream one.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah,
yeah. You're right. You're right. Okay. Fair point.
Yeah.
I'll backstep a little bit.
Yeah. So let's talk about craft beer, Matt. Yeah. You want to give us a little bit of a history of craft beer and how it became so big?
Yeah. I mean, I can do what I can. You know, as many people can understand and know, the rise of craft beer started in the mid '90s. Mm. Different locations in the United States kind of took that off. There's definitely San Diego contributed to that.
It's a big one.
Portland, Oregon was huge. I think Portland, Oregon has the most breweries per square capita or something.
Wow.
Whatever it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I saw that, I thought it was San Diego, but I think it's because Portland's a little more condensed and San Diego spread out.
Was it like, what, one brewery for every 10 people?
Something like that.
Wow.
In Portland?
No. I don't know.
What if, dude? It's like every other person has a... Every other person has a brewery in their garage.
Everyone's home brewing, one per neighborhood.
Dude, yeah, it's just really taken off, and people are definitely kind of joining that train. A lot of the major players definitely stepping in and noticing it as well. You see some big acquisitions. I believe it was Anheuser-Busch that bought St. Archer out of San Diego.
Boo, AB InBev.
AB InBev.
They're trash. Evil.
And then Constellation Brands bought Ballast Point for $1 billion.
Oh, that's insane. A billion?
Unbelievable.
Actually, it wasn't a billion. It was 998 million. So I don't want to tell our listeners alternative facts. So if you're going to come on my podcast again, Matt, please only say facts.
Please hit me with the reliable sources.
Oh, no, I mean, if we're talking about facts, can we talk about when you dissed Shrek in the last podcast?
Wow.
Are you kidding me?
Called out.
You can't do that. Shrek's an American classic. Okay. It's one of the best animated movies.
The 2001 American history. Wait, when was Shrek 2001?
I think so. But honestly, I think the second one's best. And he dissed the second one. So.
Wow, Matt coming
I
out
I thought
the
they
Shrek
were all
too.
Trash. I don't think DreamWorks has come out with a good movie in a long time.
What?
They haven't, but they had Shrek.
Prince of Egypt is a great movie.
How to Train Your Dragon? Are you communist? Or what? Come on,
yes,
dude.
I am communist. Anyway, all right, let's wrangle this back in. So, thank you for that brief history lesson. On
Dreamcast?
On craft beer. No.
Oh.
I think... Craft beer is... So, you look at basic beers, right? Bud Light, Budweiser,
Coors.
Miller, Coors, and whatnot. I mean, those are, not bad beers. I won't tell you... Bud Light's pretty trash.
It's
piss water. But, like,
They are beers for summer, heat.
In college. I mean, that's what we drank before we figured out...
Right. When we were 21.
Beer. Before we had disposable income.
Right, exactly, yeah.
That's a fact.
That's a big one, too. Yeah, because I walked into Ralph's the other day, and if you didn't have a Ralph's membership card, a Ballast Point six-pack was
$18.99. Oh, my. Wait, in Malibu or in Santa Monica?
In Malibu, at the Ralph's.
But people still pay for it.
$11.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. If you didn't have a Ralph's card, then you had to pay
$18.99. But I think that's still the discrepancy between buying it in California and buying it in Texas, because I buy it for $12 here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, California is more expensive than everywhere else in the world.
Texas forever. March 2nd.
Yeah. Yeah. Texas, so anyway, I personally, in my now 22nd year, have loved getting to travel around the country and try different craft breweries. Mm. I mean, but a year ago, Matthew and I went down to San Diego and hit up a bunch of great breweries. Ballast Point, Stone,
Green Flash.
Yeah.
Ooh.
32 North, a little hip one. Carl Strauss was down there as well.
Nice.
And a couple more local joints that aren't really doing a lot of regional distribution, but are well known in the area. And it's a cool environment going into these breweries and hanging out and getting to try a little bit of everything. And I don't know, some of the variety that we've gotten to have. I mean, the stuff that Ballast Point has.
Oh, it's so innovative. That's
it's
a cool
so good,
about
dude.
It.
Yeah.
And I really feel like Ballast Point especially has been able to export the product on a national scale.
Yeah.
Well, because I can buy everything here from Ballast Point.
I was seeing Ballast Point in Shanghai.
Exactly. That's what I mean. It's awesome. It's everywhere now. It's I really feel like craft brews, especially in the past, I don't know, maybe really 5 years, have really exploded on a national kind of exporting and frankly international branding point.
So why do y'all think that is? Is it changing consumer tastes, or is it social media, or is it negative stigma against some of the big beer companies?
Yeah, I think it's a handful of all those. Honestly, really? Kind of a mixture. Yeah. You see, because it's the younger generation. It's people our age that are really kind of understanding it.
Right.
They're not so much getting mad, but they kind of have this weird feeling towards the Anheuser-Busch, the Miller,
big Coors, corporations who've been doing it for a while.
And when you have this craft, sometimes family atmosphere, people just really latch onto it.
Yeah, and I really think like that's been a very, consistent trend for folks our age, is that it's not like the rejection of the norm, because that's not really the right way to put it, but it's like just being able to try like newer and smaller things, like being unafraid to like explore something different. Yeah. And I really feel like as we've kind of moved more to the forefront, and like as far as workforce goes, and like getting a little more involved and having a little more cash, frankly, to like spend on goods, that's been responded to by the industry. So instead of like getting more of those mainstream type of beers, we've been able to explore in a little more craft breweries.
Yeah.
A little more choice, I guess,
and,
is a better way
to put
it.
I do every once in a while drink beer at home, but typically if I'm going to go drink a beer, I want to go do it somewhere out in public with my friends and like enjoying the environment. I mean, I went down to Arts District Brewery. It's actually an Angel City one a couple nights ago, and it was so fun. We were out there playing cornhole and skee ball.
Yeah.
And all of the beer there was craft beer, and I was like, I enjoy this environment a lot. I enjoy it very, very much. And if I'm going to go out and drink beer, I'm going to want to drink a good beer. I'm not going to want to drink a trashy
Bud. Because no one wants to spend money like on a crappy beer when you can spend like a little bit extra to get something that's way higher quality, in my personal opinion.
Exactly. Matt, what would you say is the worst beer in the world?
Bud Light.
Really?
I don't hesitate. That's the worst beer in the entire
in existence
world.
You'd put it below or above like Keystone and Natty?
I don't mind Keystone. I'll drink that before I drink Bud Light.
Wow.
It has a noticeably worse taste to me.
You heard it first.
Who makes Keystone?
I don't know.
It's AB InBev.
Oh, it is AB InBev? Oh, wow.
Is it really?
It's all the same.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Even Natty Light, all those big ones are.
Huh. Interesting.
Michelob Ultra is not bad, but they're also owned by AB InBev.
For me, it's like any of those big beer brands now is like if it's hot outside and like I'm by the pool or floating. Like that's when I'll drink those. But other than that, if like I'm going to dinner or something along those lines, I'll get a craft brew.
Yeah. 100%.
If I'm heading to Bakersfield, I feel like I have to drink a Coors though, otherwise get all up in arms.
Otherwise they're not going to take you back.
Although Bakersfield's got a couple breweries now too, right?
Yeah, they have two that I can think of. One of them's pretty good. One's just average.
Yeah.
You know how many Palmdale has?
Zero.
Actually, no, I'm lying. Actually, a couple. I'm actually lying. I totally was going into that saying zero and have to retract my statement now.
Yeah.
We have a few. Lucky Luke's, check them out.
Okay.
Not terrible.
Well, Matt and I have talked about potentially having a brewery together one day. And we see a big market for it being in the South, where the main beers that people are drinking currently, the main tastes are just the more common discount cheap
ones.
Beers. Yeah. And so there's a real market for it down there.
So
I'm interested
to
hear what y'all have to think about kind of the future of the industry. I mean, Matt, you're going to work for a wine distributor up in Modesto, California, right?
Ooh.
After your wedding. Congrats on that, by the way.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Shout out to Matt's fiance, Morgan.
She's pretty cool.
She's pretty cool.
I would hope you think that. I can confirm. She is pretty cool.
Can confirm.
But yeah, what do you think? What do you think is the future of the industry? Do you think it's going to like top out at some point? Do you think it's going to capture its market share soon? Or do you think it has a lot more room for growth?
Well, as the market gets more saturated, these big players are going to come in. You've seen it already, as we mentioned. But they're going to start selecting some of the best, buying them up. And eventually, I think it's going to hit its plateau. I mean, just like every industry.
What do you think that plateau is, though?
I don't know.
Well, because I'm kind of
talking
curious.
About year-wise or, like, how many breweries?
Like, percentage-wise.
Oh.
I don't know. What do you think?
The way that I'm looking at it is, like, I look at it kind of almost in a software kind of format, whereas, like,
it'll really be about like what the top, like the cream of the crop is, and like there'll be a ton of startups, quote unquote startups. Mm-hmm. And then like the very best will be bought by the Anheuser-Busch, the InBevs, like, you know what I mean? Like those top players, those will be bought out by them. But anything that's kind of lackluster, more or less, will just kind of fizzle out and die the same way that the software and tech, quote unquote, industry is going.
Right. So in this Time article that I pulled up real quick, in 2011, uh-huh, craft beers had 5.7% of the market share for beer. Today, it's 12.2%.
Wow. That's actually larger than I thought it was going to be.
It's grown quite a bit. So wow,
that's impressive.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I think that makes sense too. Like, that's right when we really could feel it explode too. Like, I mean, think about 2000. I mean, obviously, I don't think any of us were legal in 2011, but still, like, you didn't really see that many craft brews like in a supermarket, and nowadays you see it all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so before we close out this particular segment, favorite brewery or favorite beer, you can list a couple.
Here we go.
Oh, right. Dear Lord.
Matt, hit us up.
Go first.
Without a doubt, it's Ballast Point. They're the most innovative brewery I've ever been to, doing so many different things with all different types of beer. Whether, you know, it's the new sours, their dark beers. I mean, the Sculpin IPA is probably the best I've had.
Drinking it right now?
Reasonably, exactly. There's a reason people will pay $17, $18 for a six-pack, because it's that good.
Yep.
At least for me, it's Ballast Point all day.
100% worth it. I will agree with that, but just to rep a little bit of Austin breweries, go look at Thirsty Goat. Amazing.
What do they have? What's their specialty?
Oh, dude, I have been really enjoying, actually some of their pale ales have been really good. And they have a few, so I don't want to name anyone just to give it a little more bias, but go check them out. They're very good. Austin breweries, okay. Very impressive.
I'll make the trip down to Austin. We'll do a brewery tour.
I'll be here, baby. West side of town.
I would say that my least favorite brewery is St. Archer's, because it's owned by AB InBev.
They took a hit when they bought them.
And see, it hasn't been the same. Like, it's not good anymore. Yeah. Remember, Matt and I went to the brewery.
Oh, you did?
And it was probably our least favorite brewery that we went to in San Diego.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was my least favorite.
Yeah.
I feel like NorCal, too, has been getting a lot of, like, not buyouts, but higher volume brew companies lately. And I feel like there's going to start to be a big round of buyouts.
Probably.
For, like, NorCal, like Central Coast.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. My favorite brewery, I do enjoy Ballast Point. I think right now I'm really actually digging those Anderson Valleys. I had a winter ale from them 2 weeks ago that was really, really good. It was like a mix of cinnamon, nutmeg, and something else.
I think you were telling me about this. I don't know if it was on the pod, but you were telling me about it at some point. It was really good.
It was delicious. It was very good. So now, I'm gonna say Anderson Valley. Plus, I like that they have very sustainable practices.
We'll have to make a trip up there. Some
respect. Dude, let's do it, bro.
Boys, now tell me this. What's your opinion on Sam Adams? The kind of the start of the craft brew industry, but are they really there anymore?
No, I don't like Boston Lager, Sam Adams, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, though. They kind of helped start the whole deal.
I feel like they definitely rallied it to where it is
exactly
today.
And they do. I mean, some of them aren't bad. The grapefruit IPA that they have is decent.
Mm-hmm.
The cherry wheat's not bad. But I don't know. They're like the sixth or seventh biggest brewery, I think, in the United States.
Oh, okay. They're actually the really big now.
Boston Beer Company.
Yep.
But I don't know. It doesn't have a craft feel anymore. And then that's another thing you could debate forever is if the popularity and success gets you too big, does that ruin the reason you started the brewery in the first place?
Exactly. Right? And does that make it hipster, or does it just make it I don't know. Like does it make it a really good beer that's popular, or does it just become, or does craft beer become just like a hipster thing?
Because, I mean, making money is great.
Absolutely.
But if you sacrifice that, the small batch,
the
craft feel,
mm-hmm.
Is that
exactly
what the end goal is?
I think that's the big, I think that's where the line is drawn. It's like,
does it become a point where it's like, do you sacrifice the quality for the quantity, or do you just keep expanding until you become, you know, an InBev, any of that stuff? You know what I mean? I really think that's what separates the craft, quote unquote, craft brews from the mainstream ones.
And I guess we can use Ballast Point as our test case.
Dude, yeah.
I don't see signs of slowing down.
No.
But we'll not see. Yet.
We'll check it out when we go down there in a couple weeks. Oh, we're going really? for Matt's bachelor's party. We're going down to San Diego.
Oh,
yeah.
God, dude.
We have a tour of the main facility on the Saturday that we're
lined
down
up. Yep. Yes. Nick, we'll give you an on-pod update of our thoughts on Ballast Point after we take that tour.
Okay, good. So, yeah, whenever y'all want to have, like, a second bachelor party, Matt, you guys come down to Austin, and we'll like, see some of the Austin craft brews.
I'd love to get down to Austin. I've heard great things about the city.
It's so much fun, dude. I just got done taking some family friends around town to like, just check it out. It's the average age is 29 here. Like, it's an incredibly young city. It's ridiculous. Wow. I love it. I can't say enough good things.
Cool. Cool. Well, Matt, thanks for coming on the pod.
Thanks for having me.
You got really anything? Appreciate it. Got anything you want to plug?
Other than to watch this or listen to this podcast? No. Shrek is great, and you're wrong for thinking.
Oh. 2001 was a great year for Dreamcast, and you're wrong, Jonathan.
DreamWorks.
It doesn't matter.
Dreamcast was a video game console from the 90s.
Exactly. DreamWorks. Yeah, that bombed. Did not.
I think I've called it Dreamcast twice now.
Yeah, it's a...
In two separate...
Gosh, dang it. It's DreamWorks. Made Shrek. Dreamcast is a video game.
DreamWorks. Shrek.
And I am Jonathan.
I am Groot.
Facts. Not alternative facts. Facts. On a side note, I've been using Richard as my fake name pretty recently.
Wow.
I think I need a new one, though. So, Richard. Before we go, give me fake names that I can use when I go out.
That's fun. My go-to is Morton Sutcliffe.
Morton Sutcliffe.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's Morton intense. Sutcliffe.
That's really good.
Rodney is a good one.
Ooh, I was actually thinking Rodrigo.
No.
How about Eamon?
Ape Man?
Eamon.
Like Eamon. Like
the end of a prayer?
Yeah, kind of like the end of the prayer. The end of a prayer. Eamon. Eamon.
That's not how I would have spelled that.
That is a name. I've heard it somewhere. Look it up.
That's an insane name.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank me later.
Maybe I'll use that.
Thank me later. It's a pickup line.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, we will see y'all next week. Same time, same place. Thank you for listening to Between Two Millennials. Matt, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Nick, I'm glad you could join for this final segment.
Me too. It's the fun part. Promise I won't do this every week.
Much appreciated. All right. Take it easy, guys. Have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.
Woohoo!
Did your freaking bachelor's degree help you figure that out?